Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CPRMetro.org. Today, our special guest is Helen Mary Caldicott. Dr. Caldicott is an Australian physician, author, and anti-nuclear advocate who has founded several associations dedicated to opposing the use of nuclear power, depleted uranium, munitions, nuclear weapons proliferation, war, and military action in general. She also hosts a weekly radio program called If You Love This Planet. Dr. Helen called in from Australia and participated in a Cindy Sheehan Soapbox community radio program, and what follows is a recording of that show. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Dr. Helen.
First of all, Dr. Helen Caldicott, I'd like to welcome you to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and thank you so much for giving us your time about this very, very urgent and important issue.
Thank you.
And basically, you're talking about Fukushima. We're talking about the implications, the health implications, the environmental implications, and what is happening over there. I have a few questions that I'd like to ask you that aren't from the listeners, that are actually from myself. It's an issue that I have been working really hard on. This past week, I just had Harvey Wasserman also on my show. But it's not an issue that you see often in the corporate or mainstream media. But when we do see it, Fukushima, anything about Fukushima in the corporate or mainstream media, it seems to be about, people are talking about cleaning it up, not containing it. It's as if the meltdowns and the problems are in the past, and now we have to clean it up. What are your comments on that, Dr. Caldicott?
Yes, well, it's impossible to clean up radioactively contaminated areas because you can dig up the soil, and that's what they're doing in some parts of highly contaminated Japan, and the soil is put in plastic bags and, you know, moved to the side of the road or wherever they put it, and those plastic bags will burst and out will come the radioactive soil, number one. Number two, a lot of the companies doing this are subcontractors to TEPCO, and the Yakuza, or the Japanese Mafia, are also involved, bringing in homeless people from the streets of Tokyo and mentally ill people to do some of the work. They are surreptitiously tipping the radioactive soil, etc., into rivers and creeks. And also, there's a huge swathe of Japan now that is really radioactive, and especially all the mountains and everything. So when it rains, the rain washes the radiation, cesium, strontium, plutonium, americium, you name it, down into the creeks and rivers. But that will go on for hundreds of years because many of these radioactive elements last for hundreds to thousands of years. Also, the trees themselves become radioactive as they absorb the radiation from the soil along with the water. And when the leaves fall, the leaves are radioactive. The cedar blossoms this year were so radioactive, full of cesium, that it was really astonishing. And of course, when the pollen flew all over the place, people were inhaling radioactive pollen, was landing on their food and their, you know, on the ground and the like. So you can't clean it up. That's a misnomer. It's a euphemism. It's like saying we have to destroy the village to save it. People should be moved from radioactive areas. They should be moved as the Russians did. But the Japanese seem to be less worried about their citizens than were the Russians at the time of Chernobyl, which is very interesting.
So I follow you on Twitter, and I saw something that I've never seen before, that Japanese organized crime is involved in Fukushima and TEPCO. Do you have any comments about that implication?
Yes, there have been numerous articles about this. You see, TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power Company, is in charge of everything. But typically in Japanese society, corporations subcontract their work to other smaller companies. And over 100 small companies are now involved in cleaning up and fixing the reactors and putting the water in tanks, the whole thing. But amongst those companies are three branches of the Japanese mafia called Yakuza. And apparently for many years, the Yakuza have been involved in the nuclear industry in Japan, recruiting workers to work at the reactors. And then, of course, typically in mafia fashion, the bosses skim off a lot of the wages from the workers. So it's a totally corrupt system. And there have been numerous articles written about it, one recently that I tweeted on my Twitter page.
It just has seemed like it has been just a total incompetence and, you know, putting profit over the urgency of getting it contained. Since it's happened, it's been 2.5 years, and it seems like the radioactive waste, whether it's in the air or in the water, seems to be increasing and not diminishing.
That's true. What happened was there was, well, first of all, in terms of saving money, TEPCO is trying to spend as little as possible on this whole catastrophe, because the banks are insisting that they show a profit, and TEPCO wants to open other reactors so that it can start selling electricity again to make more profit. And so they're skimping on trying to resolve or at least mitigate some of this ghastly mess. Now, three of the nuclear power plants actually melted down, and each power plant units 1, 2 and 3, there were up to 100 tons of fuel. And what happened was when the earthquake occurred, the reactors lost their external electricity supply, which powers the pumps, which pump 1 million gallons of water per minute into each reactor to keep it cool. Now, so then underneath the reactors, in case that happened, there are huge diesel generators the size of a house, which would then kick in and provide the electricity for the pumps. However, the tsunami then came in and flooded the diesel generators so they couldn't work. The heat is so intense in those three reactor cores from the fissile material and the decaying heat from the radioactive elements that within hours the fuel started to melt. And in fact, within a couple of days, those three reactors' cores melted their way through 6 inches of steel in the reactor vessel onto the floor of the containment building made of concrete. In the process, huge amounts of hydrogen were released, which exploded in units 1, 2, 3, and 4, producing huge amounts of radiation, which then emanated from the damaged buildings. And some people think, in fact, that one or several of the cores have produced a melt through to China syndrome, which is the nuclear industry's term for a nuclear fuel core being so hot it melts its way into the earth. Now, what is happening is that the reactors were built on an ancient riverbed, and behind them are mountains, and the mountains, from the mountains, pour huge amounts of water underneath the reactors out to sea. When the reactors were operating normally, they could pump that water out to sea and it wasn't contaminated. But now the water is washing over three incredibly radioactive, damaged reactor cores, each weighing up to or more than 100 tons, and so the water is extremely radioactive. To prevent that radiation going out to the sea, TEPCO, in its ignorance, built a dam on the seaward side of the reactor, to prevent the water flowing out. But of course, the water kept flowing and overflowed the wall. And TEPCO's now admitted that ever since the accident 2.5 years ago, 300 to 400 tons of highly radioactive water have been washing out every day into the Pacific Ocean. As well as that, they're pumping up to 300 to 400 tons a day from beneath the reactors and putting them in huge steel tanks, huge, like the size of a 2-3 story building. But those tanks were not guaranteed to last longer than 5 years. They have rubber seals, their bolts are corroding, and many of the tanks are now leaking intensely radioactive water. They've got 1,060 tanks. They're building 3 new tanks a week. They're running out of places to put the tanks. And this water release will go on for the next 50 years or more because there's no way to get the reactor cores out of the ground. There's really no way to stop the water flowing down and mixing with the radioactive contaminants. And the really serious thing is if there's another earthquake near Fukushima greater than 7, it's possible that many of those tanks will collapse because they're held together with plastic pipes and duct tape. The workers who are working there, some from the Yakuza and some the homeless people from the streets of Tokyo and the like, are being exposed to really high levels of radiation. And the workers aren't being monitored or followed up medically. So we don't know what's happening to the poor fellows. But Japan's running out of human warm bodies to be able to mitigate this disaster, and it's going to go on for decades and decades. At the same time, Building 4 was seriously damaged by the earthquake, and on top of Building 4 is over 100 tons of highly radioactive fuel, which were moved just days before the earthquake. And if Building 4 collapses with an earthquake greater than 7, down will come the cooling pool. It will lose its water, which keeps it cool, and that over 100 tons of highly radioactive fuel will probably burst into flame, burn, releasing the equivalent of 14,000 Hiroshima bombs, equivalent radiation, or, you know, 10 times more cesium than was released at Chernobyl, which will seriously contaminate the Northern Hemisphere.
Well, that answers the first question from Joshua Trost in Chicago. He asked you about the fuel rods, and they could. It's not only they're not only compromised because maybe an earthquake or another tsunami, but they're going to start removing them soon.
That's
on November 8th.
Yep, that's correct. Now this is a very hazardous procedure. To remove fuel rods from a cooling pool at a reactor, and I'm sure you've all seen photographs of these deep pools that are blue, and they turn blue because of the radiation that turns the water blue. They're buried deep. They're immersed deeply underwater because they're terribly thermally hot and terribly radioactive. If you stand next to one spent fuel rod for a couple of seconds, you'll get a lethal dose of radiation. That's how radioactive they are. Now, when normally the nuclear industry removes these rods extremely meticulously using a computer because there's millimeters of distance between them, and if one rod touches another, you're going to get a critical mass and, you know, a sort of semi-nuclear explosion, and the workers will be contaminated. And the rods have been apparently damaged and cracked, and they're crooked, and they're 12 feet long. And so Arne Gundersen, who's a nuclear engineer, compares it to taking cigarettes that are bent out of a bent cigarette package. And as you pull them out, they're going to break. And if they break, then a large amount of radioactive gases will be released, and the workers will have to evacuate the site. So this is a highly contentious, extremely dangerous procedure which will take over a year to happen with people who are not trained to do this, you know. I dread for the people of the Northern Hemisphere, because you need to know that down here in the Southern Hemisphere we don't get the radiation because the two air masses at the equator do not mix. Right. So that's one of the other main overarching concerns for the people who responded to the show is that, first of all, this is the event and the story of the century, but nobody is covering it. And here, up here, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, nobody is covering it. And I had a question from a friend of mine, George Camarota, who has grandchildren. I have grandchildren. We have children and grandchildren. We both live in California. Should we be thinking of relocating our families to the Southern Hemisphere?
Well, that's a very difficult question, Cindy. I've got my youngest son lives in Boston with my small grandchildren. And, you know, if it got too bad, I said to him one day, Will, I'm going to fly the family out to Australia. And he said, Mum, we'll become refugees. I won't have a job. And I said, yes, but you've got two young children, my grandchildren. And the children are 10 to 20 times more sensitive to radiation than adults. Of course, people can't evacuate to the Northern Hemisphere because billions live in the, to the Southern Hemisphere because billions live in the Northern Hemisphere. What should be happening, Cindy, is that the whole world community should be aware of this. The best nuclear engineers and brains in the world should be going to Japan to help them work out this situation. But the Japanese are very proud and they won't allow other people to come and help them with their work. Even the International Atomic Energy Agency isn't in there. And as Arnie Gundersen, the nuclear engineer, says, what that should happen is they should invite Bechtel, which is a huge engineering corporation which builds nuclear reactors and builds nuclear weapons. I don't like Bechtel one little bit. But that's the sort of experience and expertise that is needed right now to try and mitigate this coming global public health catastrophe.
Yet President Barack Obama is saying that he wants to spend billions of more dollars to upgrade our nuclear weapons, where I agree with you. We should be demanding the world community get together to solve this problem, which I understand is many more times more lethal than Chernobyl was.
Well, it is a worse accident than Chernobyl. But luckily for Japan, in the first couple of days after the accident, where huge amounts of radiation escaped, 80% of it blew across the Pacific. The ambient levels of radiation over Seattle went up 40,000 times above normal. So you got quite a dumping of radiation all over the United States and North America and Canada and the like, and indeed around the globe to Europe. Every day, every hour, 10 million becquerels of radiation are being emitted from the Fukushima reactors in various isotopes, cesium, strontium, yttrium, tritium, plutonium, carbon-14, you name it. But it's mostly blowing over Japan, and every day the Pacific Ocean becomes more and more and more radioactive.
And this is another thing also. There has been some, evidence of people, sailors, sailing from Japan within maybe 3,000 miles of the coast of Fukushima that say there's nothing alive there. Do you have any information about that?
Well, I can talk about, I held a symposium at the New York Academy of Medicine on March the 11th and 12th, the second anniversary of Fukushima, called The Medical and Ecological Consequences of Fukushima. And I had the very best scientists in the world to present the latest data on that accident. And the during that time, there were two sailors who were on USS Reagan, which was, I think, an aircraft carrier. And when the accident occurred, they were diverted to within a couple of miles of Fukushima. The people who worked on the aircraft carrier were not told of the meltdowns. They were not told about the radiation releases. They were up on deck all the time. Some were handling the helicopters as they came in and out, delivering supplies to the people in Fukushima. And they started developing symptoms of, well, some of them were very highly contaminated. Over 100 of these sailors are now suing the Department of Navy or Defense, whatever it is. They had to sign an agreement when they left the Navy about a year later that they wouldn't divulge any information and that their illnesses that might occur later are not associated with radiation. I mean, it's just obscene. And these sailors are not being cared for medically. They can't afford to go to doctors. The two who testified at my conference had never had a full medical examination, neither of them. And then they left the Navy. If you want to hear their testimony, go to my website, HelenCaldicottFoundation.org, and look up and download the symposium at the New York Academy of Medicine. Yes, and there was another account recently of a sailor who sailed from Okinawa or somewhere over to the west coast of America, and he said normally, you know, there are birds everywhere and fish and whales leaping out of the water and dolphins, uh-huh. And he uh-huh. said not only did he see a great deal of rubbish, which obviously came from the tsunami, but he saw virtually no signs of life and one whale with a huge tumor on its head. So that was a very, very worrying account.
Yikes. So we do have a couple of questions from people on the call. And since I'm having these technical issues, I'm going to ask them to you. Anita Stewart, my friend from Florida, who actually has done a lot of work on the oil spill in the Gulf that is also still an ongoing environmental catastrophe that nobody talks about. She asked the question, what do we need to be boycotting that comes from Japan? What do we need to be telling people? And people think that this is a conspiracy theory because they don't hear about it on the corporate media. What do we need to prove that this is affecting us globally?
Well, first of all, you mustn't buy any Japanese food. No seaweed, no miso, no fish, no vegetables, no rice, nothing. Number one, I went to a restaurant recently in New York, a sushi restaurant, and, you know, it's very swish and people are drinking their sakis and the sushi chefs were up there cutting up the fish decorously and I said, where does the fish come from? They said, Japan. I couldn't believe it.
Are you kidding me, really?
Yeah, and the other thing is you mustn't buy food from Europe because 40% of Europe is heavily contaminated with radioactive elements from Chernobyl. And you don't know which food you're eating, whether it's radioactive or not. You can't taste, smell or see radiation. And it takes up to 60 or 70 years to develop a cancer after you've eaten radioactive food. So really look at the labels of the food that you're buying to see where it comes from. You know, you can buy, on the whole, American food at the moment. You haven't had a decent meltdown yet, although I think it's not if but when. And you should be demanding that your EPA test the fish routinely that are caught off the West Coast. Already tuna are arriving in California carrying cesium from Fukushima. That air monitors be set up across the nation to monitor the air, particularly as we may be facing another impending radioactive catastrophic release. And that should go into effect right now. Now, what you need to do is, you know, you do live in a democracy and you have representatives in Congress. They are not your leaders. You are their leaders. And when they come back to your district, you go, you make an appointment, take some doctors if you can find some, and go and educate them. Get my book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. Make them read it. And if they don't read it, make sure they don't get elected next time. And that goes for the senators too. They may appear powerful. They're only powerful because you elected them. Use your democracy. Educate your representatives. Your president is not your leader. You are his leaders. Use your bodies. Don't just sit at your Twitter things and your Facebooks. Get out and do what the people in Wisconsin did. Take over the State House. Get out and take over Congress. I mean, I'm really saying for the health and well-being of you and your grandchildren and all future generations, that's what you must do. This is your country, it's your democracy, and you decide what happens.
Right, but this has been a problem because, like I said, you know, most people get their information, not people who listen to my show, but most people get their information from the corporate media that has basically here in the U.S. has had a blackout on Fukushima. And we know that General Electric is really has a lot of presidents and Congress people in their pockets. General Electric has interest, vested interest in the media, and built the reactors at Fukushima and reactors that are in many nuclear power plants here in the U.S. Do you think that that has any bearing on the
Cindy, what I have to tell you is that I helped to lead the movement in the 80s for the nuclear weapons freeze. And in 5 years, we got most Americans agreeing, like 80%, that nuclear war was bad for their health. And I tell you, I could go to Congress, I could get Tip O'Neill off the House floor, and he was chairing the House, and come to see me in his office and say, what can I do for you, doctor? And it was because the people were behind us. And politicians get really scared when people, you know, threaten not to vote for them. So you've got to go and know who your Congress people are and teach them. Say, you've got to listen to me. You've got to take doctors and well-educated people along with you, as well as mothers and grandparents. You need to do demonstrations that are classy, which will attract the media. Greenpeace always gets the media. Every time a politician speaks from your district, you should stand behind him or her with a sign. You know, that's very, very provocative. Talking about children dying from leukemia and cancer from radiation from Fukushima. You have to use your brain, Cindy. I came to America and I was an alien and I was a woman. And, yeah, I did help to recruit 23,000 doctors for positions for social responsibility. And we had a huge impact, but I was nobody. And I was determined to change what was going on in the United States. And I kind of did with help from lots of others. So just know that you've got to do it. Read everything you can about it. Understand deeply radiation and nuclear power. That means reading my book and go to my website. And then you will know what you have to do. Don't ask people. You will be empowered and you will know what to do. You've done your thing, Cindy. You've been brilliant.
I think most of us on this call and many people understand the urgency of this. And I think what Anita in Florida was asking is the best way to impart that to people who only watch CNN or
Fox. I'll tell you what you do.
Or MSNBC. You ask your,
what you do is you ask your friends to dinner, and your relatives, who are all so-called conservative. Mind you, I'm a conservative because I'm for conserving life. People who are for nuclear power, they're radical. They're for, you know, long-term murder, let's be frank. Ask them to dinner and then lock the door and then play them one of my tapes or, you know, I'm all over the internet. Find the best one and play it to them and say, look, I'm only doing this because I really care for you. And you're not leaving till you've had your nice coffee and a brandy and some chocolate and you're going to watch this. And then you can go. And educate them. Educate them. And then that could become a big story in the media. What a whole lot of you do. Why don't you form a huge organization of everyone who's worried? And each one of you have those house parties.
And so, yes, that's an excellent suggestion. What do you think is basically behind the inattention to this urgency? Is it the arrogance of Japan? Is it the incompetence and greed of TEPCO?
Yes, it's the arrogance of Japan. They're lying continuously. The doctors have been told by their superiors not to talk about radiation to their patients and not to let them know that their sicknesses may be related to radiation. And Japan is a society where everyone bows and is obedient and compliant to the top dog. The women are desperate. The mothers are desperate. I've been there and big speaking tours, and the mothers are so grateful when they hear the truth, even though it's scary. They're grateful. So Japan is lying to its people. There's a big media block out of what's going on. And in fact, they're about to pass a law that any journalist who writes about Fukushima could go to jail.
That's another thing I was going to ask you
about. We're talking
about
a police state.
Right.
And also in America, most of your journalists are young. Most of them are ignorant about the radiobiological effects of internal emitters like cesium and plutonium and strontium and everything else. So they don't know. And so when they report, they say, well, nobody's died yet. A, we don't know who's died because the records are not being released, even if they are keeping records. But I will say that that 44 children so far have been tested have thyroid cancer or are suspected of having it. In Fukushima, the incidence of thyroid cancer in children is 1 in 1,000,000. This is the tip of the iceberg, and this is going to occur. More and more people are going to get cancer and leukemia, premature aging, babies being born deformed, cataracts of the lenses, and I would refer you to a brilliant report by the New York Academy of Sciences called Chernobyl, and over 1 million people now have died from that accident in the first 28 years. But Europe will remain contaminated for the next hundreds to thousands of years. We are talking about major future public health problems with epidemics of leukemia, cancer, and genetic disease. And so Fukushima is worse than Chernobyl, although much of the radiation blew across the Pacific, but you could extrapolate, but it's more densely occupied and with people than around Chernobyl. So we would expect, you can extrapolate this Chernobyl data to Japan. I mean, this is just extraordinary. So I want you all to go online and order the book called Chernobyl. Picking it up here. Consequences of a Catastrophe for People and the Environment. And it's a compilation of 5,000 medical and scientific articles written in Russian and translated into English. Read it. It's the scariest book I've ever read in my career as a doctor.
I just really want to thank you for your work on this and your, decades-long work on this issue. It's been very important, as you said. I watched an interview or probably a talk that you gave, and I also have been to Japan. I was there a couple months after the accident, and I was, doing the same thing. I was going from place to place talking to people. It was over the anniversaries of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, so mm-hmm. We were doing peace work, anti-nuke work also. But you also talked very, and I met an Iraqi doctor from Basra, a pediatrician who is fighting the effects of depleted uranium. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because these are issues, I think, that are very intricately and intimately linked.
You're right, Cindy. America, what can I say, has been using radioactive ordnance and shells in Afghanistan, Bosnia, and Iraq for a long time. The shells are made of uranium-238, which is a byproduct of making bombs and nuclear power plants. When you dig up uranium, it has two isotopes, 238 and 235. 235 is the one that fissions and you can make bombs and reactors out of it. It's only present in 0.7%, and it must be enriched at 3% for nuclear power and over 50% for bombs. The rest left behind is uranium-238. It's waste. It's 1.7 times more dense than lead, and when you make an anti-tank shell out of it, or bullets, momentum equals mass by velocity. So if you have a big mass and you shoot it out very fast, it penetrates the armor of tanks like a hot knife through butter. When it hits the tank, it's pyrophoric, and 80% of it burns, producing tiny little aerosolized particles that can be inhaled into the terminal air passages. Children are playing in these destroyed tanks. They're playing on the ground, which is covered with this aerosolized uranium. It is concentrating in their food. It's in their water. And uranium is a heavy metal. It's excreted through the kidneys, and it can cause kidney cancer and bladder cancer. It's also excreted through the semen. And it can also cause bone cancer and leukemia and many other cancers. The pediatricians, my colleagues in Basra and Fallujah, where God knows how much America used of uranium weapons, they use 360 tons, I think, in Basra and lots more in Fallujah, had noticed shortly after the Basra thing a large increase in children with cancer. And because of the sanctions against Iraq, they had no chemotherapeutic agents or radiotherapy machines to treat these patients, and they used to stand at the foot of the children's beds and weep. The incidence of cancer in Basra and Fallujah is extremely high amongst the children, and also the incidence of severe congenital anomalies, babies being born with no brain, single eyes, no arms, is extremely high, so much so that the obstetricians have told the women to stop having babies in Fallujah and Basra. Now, the thing is that uranium-238 lasts for billions of years. Its half-life is 4.5 billion years. And so, therefore, America has contaminated the cradle of civilization where arithmetic began, the law began, writing began between the Tigris and Euphrates with radiation for the rest of time. So these people are destined to live and all their descendants with these ghastly diseases for the rest of time. This has been a nuclear war without the blast. How dare America do that? And probably much of the uranium is Australian uranium because that's what we export, uranium. And so we were part of the coalition of the willing. I love that term, the willing to kill people.
Right.
Australia, the UK, and America. I mean, it's so wicked. It's so evil. And I wrote an article for the New York Times some years ago, about maybe 9 or 10 years ago, describing the medical effects of uranium-238 weapons. And they said to me, we are unable to publish this. Which meant to me that someone told them they couldn't. Who told the New York Times they couldn't publish an article? So there's been a huge cover-up by the Pentagon, and yet if you read the Pentagon literature, and I've recounted that in my book, Nuclear Power, The New Nuclear Danger, I quote Pentagon documents saying this is terribly dangerous, and in fact, a tank in Kuwait was damaged by uranium weapons, and the Kuwaitis are allies of America. So what they did, the Kuwaitis made America take the tank back and bury it in concrete back in America. But there are hundreds or thousands of such tanks lying around the desert and in populated areas in Iraq.
Oh, that's true. They say the war is over, but it's far from over, and it won't be over.
It will never be over. It will
never
be
over.
And I can't say how wicked I think this is as a pediatrician. I mean, we spend our lives trying to save the lives of children. And absolutely. Often our patients. My specialty is cystic fibrosis, the most common fatal genetic disease of childhood. Well, when my patients die, how many children have I helped to die? And, you know, these radioactive elements will increase the incidence of these genetic diseases like cystic fibrosis, hemophilia, hemochromatosis, diabetes. I could go on and on. There are 6,000 such diseases. So what we're doing is committing future generations to epidemics of genetic disease, to cancer, to leukemia, and to deformed babies and radioactive food.
Well, you have been informative and inspiring, and I do agree that we need a large movement here in the United States to force our employees and the government to get on this issue. They have children, they have grandchildren. I want you to again give your website so people can get more information, but I have one basic question from two callers. One is Anita, again from Florida. One is Isha from Ashland, Oregon, and they want to know your opinion on, do you think that these things like the incompetence of Fukushima, what happened in the Gulf oil spill and other oil spills and nuclear disasters around the world, if they happen, but it seems like the response is inadequate. The response is they lie to us. They always lie to us about what's happening. Do you think that these are the population agendas by the global elite?
What was your question? Do I think what?
That they're depopulation agendas by the global elite.
No, I don't. The agenda is greed.
Right. Well, I think it's capitalism, yeah.
Well, that's capitalism is greed.
Right.
Jesus was a socialist.
Absolutely.
He said, leave your earthly belongings and follow me. It's more difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. Period. I've had men say to me, who are building cruise missiles, I say, well, what about your children? They won't have a future if there's a nuclear war. And they look at me with eyes like dead stones and say, I'm making money. I said, yes, but what about your children? I'm making money. And then on their deathbeds, because I help a lot of these characters when they're dying, they recant and tell me all the wicked things they've done in their life. Because they've known all along, their conscience has been there all along, but it's too late.
That's like the Rockefellers and the Carnegies endowing major, and even Nobel, Alfred Nobel endowing, you know, things to, because they think it's going to prevent them from going to hell or something. I don't know.
So. Oh, well, I mean, I don't think there's ever there or hell anyway. I'm a doctor. I'm a pantheist.
Right, well,
so I worship
I don't
nature.
Know what they think. Yeah, I don't know what they think when they endow their you know, endowments and their foundations and things like that. But so it's not an agenda, it's just a byproduct of greed.
Correct.
Okay. So Dr. Helen Caldicott, again, I really thank you so much for taking your time to do this program with us and give us your website so we can get more information. You gave us a lot of food for thought and a lot of things that we could look up.
Well, first of all, go to my personal website to look at all my books, and you can order them. It's helencaldicott.com. My website for my foundation is helencaldicottfoundation.org, and there you will find huge numbers of articles on all subjects like thorium reactors and depleted uranium and nuclear power and nuclear war and all sorts of things. Plus the symposium I held in New York. And incidentally, a book is being composed from that the symposium and the presentations called Crisis Without End, with a picture of the most beautiful little Japanese baby on the cover with a Geiger counter over its head, which for me as a pediatrician and a grandmother says everything.
Also, I saw on your website that you will be back in the United States on a speaking tour, and people can get more information about that.
Yes, that's on my website too, yes.
That's going to be in November. You'll be on the East Coast?
Yep, I'll be in Boston for a week. I'm addressing the American Public Health Association on Monday morning, the 4th of November at the Convention Center in Boston. I'm speaking in New Hampshire on Saturday night, the 9th, I think, at the New Hampshire Peace Organization. And I am opening a film in Hollywood on the 13th of November called Fallout, which is a film about the making of On the Beach by Stanley Kramer.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm giving grand rounds at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, the pediatric department, on Thursday, October the 14th, I think at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for participating. And I want to thank everybody who called in. So I'm going to let you get off to your next appointment, Dr. Caldicott. And thank you so much for joining us.
Just one for the Cindy.
Okay.
You can lead the revolution. You can be the Joan of Arc.
Well, I'm trying.
I'm giving you
I try every day to do that.
I'll help you, Cindy.
Yeah, 24/7 trying to foment revolution over here. So
okay, lovey. Good
and
luck.
With your help, we'll get it done.
Yep, yep.
It should be a grandmother revolution, right?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was a
Thank
pleasure
you,
talking to you.
Bye bye.
That's the soapbox for today. It's pretty scary, but like Dr. Helen said, we should use our heads and work together to demand that Japan and the international community do everything it can as quickly and as safely as possible to contain and clean up this nightmare at Fukushima. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, and I'd like to thank Dr. Helen Caldicott for taking the time to be with us from Australia for this important topic. I'd like to thank you especially for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.